Hello, I'm Anne Hurst, the terrified writer, and you're listening to Life is Scary, the podcast that explores different ways to overcome the fears, doubts, and insecurities that try to sabotage our creative efforts. Life is Scary is unsponsored, but it's only a matter of time before the world's leading ethical brands start queuing up to get a piece of this moderate to moderately high octane chatcast that's jammed to the rafters with waffle. Ooh, how about you, jam companies and waffle companies? Just a thought. Hi, and welcome to episode 7, which is all about letting go. Letting go of fear, of ego, in fact, letting go of all the junk that holds us back. And nobody knows more about letting go than my guest, improv teacher and founder of the Creative Leadership Lab, Alex Menoms. He works with groups and businesses to challenge and broaden their creative thinking in order to problem solve. He's like a creative coach, but not. I'll let him explain. Hope you enjoy it. Get yourself comfortable.
Hello. Hello, Anne.
So, Alex, you've just been explaining. You're not a creative coach, but could you just briefly tell me what it is you do?
What do I do? So, in my kind of day job, so I work with small teams in businesses or charities, mm-hmm. and I help them collaborate, essentially, find ways to collaborate where they solve problems, get ideas, and actually get out and test those, particularly pushing them to their kind of creative edge, so they do things that they wouldn't normally do, and they see things in different ways.
That's what you do in improvisation, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, same thing, different kind of, yeah, different way.
Approach, yeah. So what got you into improv?
What got me into improv? About 5 or 6 years ago, I saw a presentation from a guy called Dave Hall, who is just, he's a creative genius, I think. And he was talking about how we get stuck cognitively. We follow patterns, mm-hmm. And once we've got a pattern for things, we don't really change that pattern. You know, if you go to a place and you sit at a table, then you go out for a break and you come back, we all sit at the same places. So we get very comfortable, and we end up just not seeing what else could be done. We get quite stuck, kind of fixed on things. So he did a great talk on that and a whole load of other stuff. And I just went up at the end and said, I want to work with you. So over a few years, I was kind of apprenticed to him, helping teams do, he called it creative problem solving. I like to think of it as sort of creative thinking. I think there's more than just problem solving to it. So then that led me to where I am now, which is, I work with a variety of companies, helping them to basically think differently.
I got in touch with you because I'm trying to put myself out there to stretch myself creatively. Mm. Obviously, when I saw your leaflet, I was struck and immediately didn't want to do it. But before I could stop myself, I got on the phone to you and agreed to do it.
Yeah.
And I have to say, one of the main things I've learned from it, or I have gained from it, is this looking at the world differently.
Yeah.
I do look at the world completely differently, and I don't feel so afraid to open my mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas before, I really was, I think.
Okay.
I really felt stuck. So from that point of view, thank you.
Yeah. My pleasure.
Job done. So one of the things I want to talk to you today about is, in improv this week, we talked about letting go.
Yeah.
And the art of letting go is something that probably can be worked on. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, it's a kind of a practice, isn't it? Something you can do more of or avoid. So
yeah, that's what I'd like to talk to you about. Okay. What are your first thoughts if someone came to you and you could see that they were, you know, they were having trouble letting go, which a lot of us do? What would you kind of, how would you ease them into at least being open to the idea?
Okay, in an improv kind of setting, I think it makes a big difference if you're with other people that are doing it at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So I tend to always work with groups. I find that's just the dynamic that I love. I don't really go too much down the gently route. Really?
Notice that.
So like, we did an exercise just the other day where it's in pairs and it's kind of tricky and it's bound to go wrong. You're counting alternately 1, 2, 3, but each person's doing something and it's going to go wrong, and I make it harder and harder with more and more things, and I get people to shout out if they get it wrong, "Woohoo, we fucked up."
Yeah.
And it just releases you from saying, do you know what, I don't have to get this right. In fact, getting it right is kind of dull. you know?
It's, so, yeah.
Yeah, and there's another variation.
That was very funny.
It's quite liberating,
isn't
it?
Yes.
Yeah.
In fact, we were trying to fuck up so that we could go, woohoo, we fucked up!
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and there's a guy I love, he runs an improv theatre in London. He does a version of it, which is, he does a warm-up exercise and it's impossible. And when you get it wrong, you have to shout out, I'm a bad person and a terrible improviser. And you can just hear this going off all around the room. And once you've kind of got that out of your system, like, pretty much anything goes, really.
When you talked to me about that the other day, when you mentioned that on Monday night, I actually wanted to use that as a just as a thing in life.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah, yeah.
If ever I mess up in just generally out in the world, I just want to put my hands up in the air and go, I'm a terrible person and I'm awful at improvisation.
Just
randomly.
Yeah.
Because then it just sort of that gives you a get out, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, we get so in our heads, don't we? Like, we've been a combination of education, parenting, cultural norms. We try and get things right. And we'll even kind of take it away and work on it a great deal to try and get it right. And then we're mortified if it's not right. And people, you know, you get all this awkward feeling.
Yeah.
That's a lot of baggage there, isn't it? And sure, in some walks of life, you know, I don't want a surgeon who's improvising and, you know, not worried about mistakes. I want him or her to get that right.
Yeah.
But in most walks of life, you can, like, plan less, just show up
and
work with the mistakes. Yeah. You know. So I think that helps you let go a lot. And I hope... Yeah, and I love seeing people get past that. Because in a way, it's like you can get past it and almost quite quickly you go, oh, hang on, broke through that quite easily.
Talk to him about less, yes, let's. It's like the basis of everything that you teach, isn't it?
Yeah. Basically, yeah. So the improv group is called the Unqualified Yes. So starting from yes allows you to accept offers, accept things in life and go with them. So clearly... In improv, you can do that. You can just say yes. So yes and is the thing, or yes let's.
Yeah.
Will always allow you to build. So if two people are doing a scene, and if one of them is saying no, then they're blocking the other one, and they're kind of rejecting their creativity, their person, their uniqueness, what's of interest. They're just blocking it for whatever reason. They're not letting it in. But if they turn that around and say, yes, I accept what you just did, and I'm going to add my own thing to it, you quickly find that you're building. You're moving forward. And if you're trying to plan something in your head, you want the scene to be about, I don't know, some direction you want it to take, and the other person's not going there, you've got to let go of your thing and find something together. So I find that, again, that's quite liberating.
When you're in a room full of people you only know through improv, I think I'd find it harder if it was in front of people I knew personally who know me before. But the group that we're in is brilliant because we only know each other that way. So we've only ever seen each other behaving like total arses. I was thinking, I was like, you're the only people who've seen the true, absolute dick of me.
Yeah.
Nobody I know has seen that person.
Yeah.
That's why it's good, because you kind of guide people and go, just do it. What's the worst that can happen? I think it's liberating when you realise you can actually do it.
Yeah. So I basically, everything I put a lot of time into is really, I think of them as liberating structures. So I find that we need some structure to find freedom. That's like it's a paradox, eh? But I think... I certainly find that for me.
Yeah. Structured liberation.
Yeah.
That idea.
I'm completely kind of, in many ways... chaotic and messy and unstructured, which is, I guess, why I, 5-6 years ago, I really switched on to, okay, well, what can you grab hold of that allows you to, create and also be comfortable at your creative edge, whatever that might be? Because often we kind of say, oh, my creativity is not as good as yours, or you're right, yours should be out there or published or on a stage, and mine is, it's only so good. And that limits us. So I really like to try and find ways that help us kind of let the genie out and just enjoy it. Just go, it is what it is, for better or worse.
Was there ever a point where you were, like, scared to do stuff?
So I think creatively, yeah, definitely. And I keep finding that I think I am moving in areas now where I'm less scared or fearful. But then you find other areas where you're just still blocking.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't often do scenes that are quite... intimate with people in improv, but occasionally I do, and afterwards I kind of want to say sorry to the other person. I'm like, oh, sorry, was that all right? They're like, that was great. But so I always have that. I guess I realised that in my life I I had quite a long period of working in marketing, design, copywriting, but not really feeling like I was giving my the creative best of myself.
Yeah.
And I think I found working with people in small teams, or someone started drumming above us.
Oh yeah, can I just interject and say we are recording this at Old Jet, and who is Talvin it's, above us or somewhere?
Yeah, it might be. I think so.
Yeah, so we're underneath the recording studio, and someone's decided to get the some kind of drumming thing out.
It's perfect.
We were going to do a cafe noise, weren't we?
We were
going to have the cafe app in the background because we were going to meet in a cafe and then we couldn't.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We're meeting here. We're here. And we thought, we could put the cafe app in the background. But actually, this is perfect.
It's all right.
Yeah. I'd just explain, we're in the offices of Y? Design Company at Old Jet at Bentwaters Airfield. And this little office, which is not very big at all, is designed like a granny's sitting room.
Yeah.
It has a sort of very unusual, would be very contemporary in the 70s.
It's like a settle, isn't
it's
it?
It's like an old people's home.
There's a large radio with kind of Baker-like knobs.
Yeah. And this sort of chenille sofa, three-piece suite.
Yeah, sideboard.
Flying ducks on the wall,
yeah.
And some giant ceramic fruit bowls, like as in the fruit is also ceramic. It is quite a weird little room, but I kind of love it.
I like it. He's very much, Kevin's very much let go of modernity here.
He has, in a big way.
In a big way.
He's embraced letting go of modernity.
Yeah, he really has.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's lovely.
Good on you, Kev.
Yeah.
Nice. Noises from above,
that's what
that is.
Yes, distracted me.
That's fine. But
letting go of the noises.
Oh, I really want to be able to put that song in, but I'm sure I'm going to get copyright infringement. Let it go. That's probably infringing the copyright already.
Wow.
I put a note on my desk, when I come and write, which I learned from yoga, actually, because I do some yoga. I have a post-it note permanently on my computer that says, please leave your ego outside. Thank you. And it's a note to me to remind me that actually, when I'm writing, I've got to forget about why I'm writing in a way. I've got to forget about wanting to publish. I've got to forget about readers. I've just got to write without ego.
Yeah. There's a really good TED Talk. It's called, like, This Talk Isn't Very Good. It's Dancing with My Inner Critic. And he starts with the voice of the inner critic, like publicly. It's very brave.
That's so great.
This talk isn't going to be very good. Afterwards, I'm going to remember all the bits that I didn't do, and they're the bits that would have been good, and all this kind of stuff. And then he's actually wearing a mask, and then he takes it off and does the talk, and the talk is brilliant. But it's all about how that inner critic can cower you and silence you.
Yeah.
So
I'm going to watch that.
It's good. I'll find his name.
If you can remember his name, I'll put a link on
there. He's an improviser. Can Scorpion Smoke is his book.
Can Scorpion Smoke? Okay.
Yeah.
I'll have a look at that.
Random thing. Getting past ego, so I'm going to bang the improv drum here. But so what I love about it is that, so when you are, you stand up, you get given a suggestion, and then there are kind of guidelines, there are ways to help you build something good, but very quickly you are not yourself. And so you're not playing from ego. You're kind of playing from... So everything that you need is in the other person. And you just respond and react to them and
that's
the offers
so true,
that they give you. And because of that, A, it's kind of infinite possibility. If the first thing they offer you is a mousetrap or the first thing they offer you is, come and give me a hug, you're in totally different places. And how you respond to that is then another thing.
Yeah.
And sort of two dots make a line and you're off in some direction that you just didn't know 5 seconds before. So you have to let go of everything. It's kind of like, the kind of the fourth wall in theatre. If you turn to the audience, you break the fourth wall. I find improv's a bit like the fourth wall on people's psychology. Because you're suddenly seeing if you are giving a genuine reaction to what's happening, you're getting to see what would your genuine reaction be. And it will often surprise you, and it surprises the audience.
Yes,
and that's the joy
true.
Of improv. People think it's witty one-liners, and actually, that's taking. That's not giving. The way out is the way through. You just got to keep going further and further into genuine reactions, and it gets more and more dramatic, more funny, and more interesting. So
the genuine, the playing on the genuine is is key, actually. Mm. If you're creating a scene in improv, if you just do it as a human being, as you, and as your truthful self, rather than doing it how you think it should have been played out on stage or on TV, it's much funnier.
So instead of
so that's about unearthing the truth in yourself and being comfortable with the truth in yourself, as uncomfortable as that can be.
Yeah, and some of that will be quite dark or intense or bad.
And afterwards you can feel, because we did something the other week and I did play a genuine reaction to it. And afterwards, I felt slightly shameful.
Yeah, definitely. Because you've come out, basically.
Oh, no, that was a bit of me right there.
You've got some skin in the game. I once did a scene where, so it was a Shakespearean one. We did the whole scene in COD, Shakespeare, but try and follow some kind of, you know, the meter.
Yeah.
And the scene suggestion was that the head of a noble family, and I was being dressed by my servant for battle.
Yeah.
So, you know, guy's strong suggestion. We've got a lot of the information there. So he was dressing me, and he was saying, "Oh, you would be so proud of you tomorrow. You have ridden into battle at the front of the army. You know, you're brave, and your courage will inspire us all." And as it kind of went on, I was being quite tentative, but going, "Well, yeah, but does it make sense if I'm the head of this noble family that I ride at the front? I mean, I know that's a tradition, but it doesn't really make sense. I'd be better to tuck in behind, really, wouldn't I?" All in kind of COD Shakespeare, and then it kind of went on. And as he got sort of more confused, almost like, why would you not want to be the brave boy you've been brought up to be? And then I sort of turned it on him and I said, "No, not today, not I, but you. You will ride into battle for me. I will dress like you, you will dress like me." And I started putting my armour on him. And he looked, like you could see actually his genuine reaction was one of just disgust at my like immoral character. And I was feeling, on the inside, I was thinking, this is awful. Everyone knows what a bad person I am, because this is my genuine reaction to this thing. I would never want to ride at the front of an army. I would totally be a coward and not do that. But it was so genuine. And afterwards, I had to go and apologise to everyone in the room. I was like, "I'm really sorry, you know, obviously you're aware what an awful person I am." And they were like, but their reaction was like, "Shut up, we absolutely loved it. You did the thing that was needed in the moment. That was just perfect."
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I've had to learn to let go again and again of that. If you let yourself really come out and really be seen for what you are, and you know, or just really let yourself be seen in any which way, you feel quite vulnerable.
And vulnerability is a good thing.
Yeah.
That's what draws people in. Brené Brown does an amazing talk about vulnerability, TED Talk. Have you seen that one?
I have, yeah.
It's so compelling, and she's absolutely right.
Yeah.
Show your vulnerable side, show your truth, and that's what will connect with people. And that's that connection, that's what we're all looking for, isn't it? Whether it's through art, whether it's through writing, whether it's through performance. We just want to connect with people.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, like we are, because we are sense-making machines, aren't we?
Yeah.
And I think if we are not vulnerable, then we're not at the edge of ourselves, and we're not learning, we're not creating, and then we're not making new sense and new meaning in the world.
And it doesn't really draw people in, does it? Because it's you putting up an invisible barrier, isn't it?
Yeah, you've kind of retreated from what's not
safe.
And
so people don't feel like they can get in.
Yeah.
Whereas if you show that vulnerable side, you know, you show your mistakes and your flaws and all the uncomfortable bits.
Yeah. I had a great experience about a year ago. I was at an improv class, and the coach said, "You know, have you got any notes? Is there anything you want to work on?" And I said, in some scenes, sometimes you have like, a few people standing on either side of the stage and you come in and out.
Mm.
I said, "I can be a bit tentative. Like I see something and I think for a heartbeat and then someone else comes in and it might be even the same thought that, and they've just gone with it." So he's a great guy. He just said, he plays bad cop quite well. So he was like, "Right, Menoms, I want you on your fucking toes. I want you jigging and dancing and moving for the next 90 minutes. If I see your feet still at any point, you are in trouble." So we did a scene, and because I was, you know, on my tiptoes and dancing about a bit, when I had a thought, I was already moving. I couldn't help but go into the scene and do it. And I don't know, it was probably a car crashed all
it's
over.
It's like a tennis player waiting for the shot, isn't it?
Exactly, I was like on the baseline.
Jiggling about at the end of the crawl,
And it worked so well that so there were like, say, 16 people in the class. There were 8 of us up to begin with, and I was, you know, moving my feet all the time, getting into the scene. Then our 8 sat down and the other 8 stood up. and they started improvising. So typically, if you're sat down, you're the audience, that's where you are. But there was a moment, and I had to keep moving my feet while I was sat down, so the whole 90 minutes. And something happened while the other eight were up improvising, and I suddenly ran into the scene and was part of it. And I was there for a couple of minutes, and I did some stuff, and I thought, hang on, I'm part of the audience. And I went and sat back down again, and I thought, wow, partly, obviously, I had the first kind of, sorry, everyone, yeah. sorry, reaction. But then I thought, wow, I've just totally tripped past self-judgment and limiting belief to just do it. And it was great. So, yeah, it was kind of, he said, yeah, on your toes.
Fantastic advice.
Good, yeah.
On your toes.
Yeah.
It's just great, isn't it?
Yeah, but I nearly called the improv group On Your Toes.
Oh, did you?
Nearly, yeah. But then Justine and I kind of talked a lot more and, yeah, we felt that the unqualified yes
the
is
unqualified
more.
Yes.
Yeah, we are unqualified. Well, she's massively qualified.
I was going to say, Justine is very qualified. Isn't she ex-footlights?
Yeah. She's the qualified bit. I'm the Yeah, she's ex-footlights and storyteller and
exactly
dramatic
she's
genius.
Amazing, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She is amazing.
But then I kind of, yeah, we had different energy and points of view on it.
You do.
And yeah.
Yeah, you work great. You work really well together and you're very reassuring, I have to say. If anybody is in the Suffolk area and wants to come and join a group,
this
is the place to come. I'll put a link on the podcast.
Okay, cool.
So please come.
Can I do a quick shameless plug?
Yes.
10th of December, Improv Taste Tonight in Woodbridge. Yeah. In the evening, it will be an evening of really quite sort of games and fun. Nothing to be scared of. If you want to get creative and collaborate and see other people perform a bit of improv, come along. What's the worst that can happen, you know?
I can tell you the worst that can happen, but I'm not going to.
Uh-huh.
You've got to come along. It's not that bad.
It's not that bad.
It's not as bad as you think.
It's good. It's better than you think.
And then next term.
Yeah, and then in the January, new year. Yeah. another beginner's 6-week class.
Yeah.
So, yeah, kind of it takes a bit of time to just get your kind of improv game going well. And there's a few kind of things to just repeat practice. So,
honestly, I can guarantee if you sign up for this, and you know, you could be listening to this in the other side of the world, in which case probably Woodbridge isn't the best idea.
Bit of a
schlep, but improv, if you're prepared to just throw yourself in, it will really change how you see the world. It'll probably change your behavior, it'll certainly change your attitude, and it can only really enhance any sort of creative side to yourself.
I totally agree with that.
Because it's freeing. It's just another thing. It's just another sort of string to that bow that just adds just that extra bit of freedom, that bit of liberation, that bit more. It puts that a bit more risk into your life. That's quite exciting and thrilling.
Yeah.
That's certainly how I've
taken
out of it. And from the people I've spoken to in the group, I think that's what we're all taking out of it.
Yeah. Definitely.
It's confidence building, definitely.
Yeah.
Stress relieving.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever in my life spent a minute pretending to die from being inside a microwave.
But you have now. A death by parrot, which I misunderstood to be death by carrot. So you're all doing...
Just you stabbing yourself
stabbing
with a
myself
carrot.
With a carrot. And you were looking at me like, oh, he's really misusing that parrot.
That parrot is weird. This parrot's a funny shape.
That's not how you do death by parrot.
No, but death by carrot by stabbing would literally take forever. It is crazy and it's silly and it's brilliant and it's really good fun. I can't recommend it enough.
I just don't think we laugh enough, do we really?
Like,
we do laugh a lot in the day, but actually we don't laugh, like belly laugh enough.
And how great is it when you do?
Oh, it's great.
You do. It's when you laugh so much you feel like you're going to throw up.
Yeah.
I've done that several times in that class. This is going to be embarrassing. I'm going to have to run out. Or I'm going to wee myself, which is terrible.
I know, We should offer pads on the way in and therapy on the way out.
Exactly. Well, at least we're all in the same boat.
Yeah.
So the unqualified yes is all about saying yes to stuff. And I challenge myself every week to do something that scares me. Or I say yes to something. Mm. This week, I have registered my TEDx application.
Uh-huh.
I have no idea what the talk's going to be about, but I've made steps towards registering myself. And these trousers, see my voluminous clowny trousers I'm wearing?
Yeah.
These are the ones that from week two, in episode two, when Dylan said, my son said he would buy me a pair of trousers online.
Right.
These are them. And they are the clowniest, biggest trousers in the world, but they're terribly comfy.
They look it.
So these are my...
You said yes to them.
I said yes to these. Quite glad. They're great after a big meal.
Yeah. So you can say yes to a big meal.
These are going to be my Christmas Day dresses because they're so gigantic. So would you go with that, Alex? Would you do something that scares you? Yes to something? But you say yes to everything.
Bit of a masochistic relationship with saying yes to things,
you?
Or making myself do things that frighten me. So I'll give you an example. I was, I went travelling, and 10 plus years ago, 10, 15 years ago, I ended up helping to decommission a Australian battleship off the south coast of Australia, randomly. And it was quite a spooky place. There was me and another guy and his cat on this boat for a while. Basically, it was, if you're working at the higher deck or you've got the sunlight, you're fine. And you're floating out in the south coast of Australia, only like 200 yards out. But it was quite spooky in the depths of the ship because you had like the abandoned locker rooms and the rooms with all the beds or the mirrors where the people would have been, looking, but it's all now lifeless. And I challenged myself.
Ghost ship.
It's like a ghost ship, yeah. And I challenged myself to go right down to the very bottom of the ship through about 3 or 4 layers, and it's pitch black, and I only had a torch, until I got my feet either side of the bottom of the bow. And eventually I got to the bottom, stood there, heard the noise slapping, the water slapping on the sides, and I was terrified, but I was also thinking,
oh my God,
why is this a problem? I should be able to do this. And then as I came back up, I had a perfect kind of Hitchcock moment where I had to come out of a sort of manhole flap, and the bloody cat was there. And I yelled at it. Get away. So I've done many other things similar to just...
scaring the living daylights out of yourself.
Yeah, just
trying.
But it is irrational fear, isn't it? Do you know the hackneyed acronym of fear? False evidence appearing real. Because like improv, like one of my favourite teachers says, essentially, the reason we fear it is that we know if we stand up in front of a group of other people, they could kill us. Your deep mammalian brain, your limbic system, is thinking, I feel like there's some kind of threat going on. This lot could turn on me and kill me.
Right.
Not consciously, you're not aware
of that.
But there is some sense of, if this goes really wrong, if I really upset them, they could turn proper nasty.
Tear me limb from limb.
Humans have... you don't register it consciously, because that's illogical, but you do register it unconsciously. Yeah, I quite like trying to unpick those things, because then they hold us back.
I love that. We'll have that as our closing thought. All fear is
false evidence appearing real. That handy acronym.
It's just false evidence appearing real. Thank you so much for coming on here. It's been an absolute pleasure.
If you enjoyed the podcast, please subscribe, rate, and leave a review. I ask this because it really does help listeners find us. Also, it's just like really nice. Yeah. If you want to get in touch, you can email me, anne@theterrifiedwriter.com. That's Anne, no E. I'm on Instagram @theterrifiedwriter, on Twitter @AnneHurst, and the blog is theterrifiedwriter.com. Speak to you next time. Bye!